What's up, Writing Better listeners? This is your host, Timmy Bauer. So excited to be talking to you along with my guest, Bruce Schutan. He has been a pro writer for 40 years. He's ghost wrote two books. One's called How I Discovered Kun Olam Through Philanthropy. Kun Olam is a, what'd you say? It was a Hebrew term for repair the world.
Exactly. It's tikkun olam, and that's what it means. It's like just doing your part to help make the world a better place.
Awesome. As well as the book Growing Ivy. So 35 of 40 years writing in the B2B space about human capital issues. And it's been fulfilling for him to go deeper on this particular industry instead of what he was doing before this. He was a general assignment reporter. And he's developed a side specialty. He developed a side specialty in the 2000s, moving to LA, writing about Hollywood. He covered the Oscars, the Emmys. He's written for Variety and some other entertainment trades. He's had his fair share of celebrity encounters. Bruce, is this all correct? Did I get your introduction right?
You nailed it, Timmy.
Great. I'm super excited to be talking to you. We were talking before I hit record and you said something. And as soon as you said it, I was like, this is our episode topic. You said that there is a tool that you pay $99 a year for that's been the best investment that you've made since the digital voice recorder. Can you elaborate on what you mean by this?
I'd be more than happy to do that. So a good 17-year period, I was farming out the transcription of all my audio files from that digital voice recorder to three different transcribers through the years, and then reached a tipping point back in December where I decided to go completely to an AI bot because my transcriber, who was terrific, bailed out of the industry and took another job that was full time. And when she was doing this on the side as a self-employed individual. So I've had clients who had an Otter AI account, and you can get a free version of that. And I started out with the free version, but then it became clear to me maybe 2 months in that I needed to pay for it. I had to get at least the basic version, which was $99 for 1 year. And that, as I said to you earlier, was the best investment I've made since 2005 when I bought a digital voice recorder that was an Olympus.
Yeah, and I should preface that we were talking about this within the context of your writing process. So I was asking you about a recent epiphany that you've had related to your writing process. And you started sharing with me how your writing process works, which I was already thinking, okay, this is what we should make the episode about. And then you mentioned this tool. So what exactly is Otter AI?
So Otter AI is an artificial intelligence bot that joins like a Zoom, Teams, or other video call that you might have. In fact, you don't even need to have a video call. You could just have somebody on speakerphone and go to the website and point and click your way on record. And I was doing that in the beginning until I decided to just go with the video calls and embed it to all those calls. And so it will automatically transcribe in real time as you're having these conversations, all of my chats for journalism, articles, and books that I ghostwrite. It's all being transcribed by a bot. Now, obviously, there are going to be certain keywords that it's not going to get right, but you can go back to the recording. And there's a bouncing ball that will take you from word to word as it comes out from the recording. And so you can go back and say, I don't know why it came out like this, but it's really helpful to go back in and clean it up. And I mean, it's an amazing investment when you consider I was paying on average about $300 to $350 a month to my transcriptionist, the human, who did a phenomenal job, and she got almost every word correct. So it was worthwhile for me. But when you figure the cost differential, and what you're getting, and you still have that backstop because you could go back to the technology and listen and watch the bouncing ball. It's just amazing.
Does it do any does it do any like organization of thought type stuff for you? Does it try to do any highlighting of key moments in conversations or anything like that? Or is it just a transcriber?
It's a good question. What happens is in the beginning of each transcription, it actually has these highlights, a summary of highlights of various talking points that came up through the conversation, which I don't need. They don't serve
Okay.
any practical purpose, but it is kind of interesting when you think of that. And I know that with generative AI, there's the controversy of to what extent do we allow these AI bots actually do the writing
What's your
versus
take on that?
human beings? It scares the hell out of me. I mean, this is just so Orwellian. And then on the other hand, it's fascinating and exciting. Wow. I don't quite know what to make of it, but I definitely am ambivalent.
Do you think that AI is going to replace the need for professional writers?
I don't really, because when we look back at the growth in social media and how all these bloggers were threatening journalism, journalists, like people would just read these bloggers and they wouldn't care that they're not professionals who may even belong to a professional society like the Society of Professional Journalists, which I belonged to for many years, or when I was in Los Angeles, the LA Press Club. I think the chickens have come home to roost on that, and it's quite obvious that these bloggers have distinguished themselves as just a bunch of knuckleheads who
What a
would
take.
be, you know, they're maybe it's for entertainment purposes to read some of these bloggers, but there is no substitute for a professional writer. There just isn't, and you know, you're either
Wow, that's a
born to be
take right
great to
there. I
do.
talked to somebody yesterday that had the exact opposite take. I should do a I should do a
Point
versus
counterpoint.
episode. Yeah. Okay,
Yeah.
so you think that like bloggers are not as good writers as professional writers.
Not only that, I don't think they're good enough thinkers. I don't really have, as a rule, I just think a lot of the blogging out there, the blogosphere is just full of nonsense. And I think that there really is something to be said about taking that path as a professional writer. I think
Wow.
this is where, to me, that's separating the wheat from the chaff, as we were talking about earlier with my writing process. You know, and maybe I'm biased because I'm a professional. I've been doing this for 40 years and I'm old enough to know I'm old school. You know,
By
I'm one of
what
these
standard
guys.
do you say that a professional writer is? Let's take your average professional writer versus your average blogger that has an audience. By what standard do you say that the professional writer is better?
Well, I think maybe it starts with education. Those of us who were lucky to study journalism in college, and back when I did it at Boston University, you know, we had it drummed into our heads about the importance of telling a balanced story and giving both sides. And I know that journalists have taken it on the chin for a good 20, 25 years about not doing that, where there's too much bias. And you and I talked about this off camera, and that's a topic for another day, maybe. But I do think that, you know, it goes to that education, training, knowledge, skill set. It starts in the classroom, I suppose. Now with
What is the kind of
bloggers,
thinking when you say they're not good thinkers, or it shows in their work that they're not good thinkers? What is the kind of thinking that you're talking about? What is the kind of thinking that makes a good writer?
you know, I
Because
do.
personally, let me reveal my bias. Personally, I think the kind of thinking that makes a good writer is some combination of the ability to critically assess an idea and resonate with an audience. And if you can only do one and not the other, I don't think you're a very good writer. I think to be a good writer, you have to do both.
I agree with you. You know, back to my dog in this fight, which is journalism. I do think that that's a great place to start for writers because it allows you to think critically and independently because our allegiance is to the truth. It's not to any particular point of view, any side of an issue. And sometimes there's one side to an issue, I get it. And there's not a fair debate. But I do think that having that skill set and knowledge gives us an advantage, a competitive advantage, whereas bloggers who don't have that formal education or go down that path, you know, maybe they can connect great with an audience and they're fantastic writers. But, you know, the other problem out there is that too many people believe in too much nonsense. Conspiracy theories have run amok, and you have it on both sides, on the left and the right. And I am not a fan of conspiracy theories whatsoever. And whenever people buy into a lot of that stuff that's circulating, you know, that's a litmus test for me about whether someone is thoughtful and reasonable. And I'll run the other way if I get an inkling that people I'm talking to are part of that ilk. Now, I have had good friends who I completely disagree
with.
You've
never had a conspiracy theory that turned out to be true?
I probably have, but I haven't given it much thought. I'm just not a believer in them. I really am not. I mean, I think that you've got to approach topics with some kind of measured thinking and be open to both sides of an issue. And
I mean, this is a total tangent from what we were talking about, but I love this. What just to play devil's advocate, because I'm on the side of like, I love conspiracy theories.
Well, I do too. They're entertaining. I love to hear them. Doesn't mean I'm going to buy into them.
Sure, sure. But what about the reality that history shows us that there are like history has within it quote unquote conspiracy theories where, okay, the lid got blown off and, oh, wow, turns out the government was doing that, or turns out XYZ thing was happening.
I completely agree. And I'm not saying that there is no such thing as a conspiracy theory that is completely reasonable and explains actual events. Of course, history is littered with corruption, cover-ups, you name it. It's just that I don't believe that they occur as often as people think they do. I think we've gone off the deep end with conspiracy theories. And then you've got groups like QAnon and out there that are just all built on conspiracy theories. And so I just take it with a grain of salt.
Gotcha. Well, anyway, getting back to the topic we were talking about, recent epiphany about your writing process. One of the things I thought was really interesting was when you were describing your writing process, it reminded me a lot of a writing process that I sort of developed naturally as I was working. I used to work at a podcast production company as a writer, and my job was to listen to podcast episodes and turn them into blog articles. So I guess technically I was a ghostwriting blogger. But the process reminded me of what you're talking about, because I used a transcription tool. The one that I used back in the day was called Temi, and all it did was throw the audio in and it would transcribe the audio. And then I would go in with a highlighter and I would highlight everything that was said that I thought was important. And then I would take all those highlighted things and I would group them together on a separate document. It based on, or actually at the bottom of the document, just like you were saying before we hit record. And I would group them into like a loose, like a really ugly outline, sort of like something, some cross between an outline and a compilation of notes. And then I would write along that as if it were an outline. And so you were describing that process. How similar is your process to what I just described? And what, why do you, like, why have you settled into this process?
Good question. So it is definitely similar. But the way my process is, and we talked about this earlier, is I will actually go into the transcript, cut and paste it into a Word document, take the yellow highlighter tool, and go through and highlight all of the stuff that I want to keep in the article, in the book, the white paper, whatever the collateral is.
Yeah.
And then when I'm done going through the document, I literally cut and paste my way through all of the yellow highlighters, put it down at the bottom of the Word document, call it crunched notes, wall it off from the rest of the stuff. So I have a record of all the stages of the writing. And then I remove the yellow highlighter because that really kind of does a number on your eyes and they pop out of your head and it's easier to look at the screen without it.
Yeah.
And then I methodically go line by line, word by word, line by line, and I just crunch all of that, all these raw notes into beautiful prose, where I'm paraphrasing most of it, but then setting apart the quotes and putting attribution, attributing the quotes with quote marks and separating the two. And I will admit that I routinely will clean up some grammar here and there because none of us speak perfectly. I know there was actually a controversy a couple of days ago in the news media about how President Biden mixed up references to the war in Iraq and the war in Ukraine. And a couple of news outlets massaged it, and they didn't actually reference the
Wow.
quote verbatim. And they kind of put, like, we're losing the war, and then they left out and they ended the quote mark there, and they left out in Iraq when he meant to say in Ukraine because of his advanced age. And there's a lot of concern about that with his reelection and everything. Totally legit. As a journalist and as someone who worships the truth, that bothered me a lot. And I realized the right wing portion of media pounced on that. But I think that they did absolutely with pure legitimacy to do that because we want to be transparent with the public. And so it's important to really kind of dial that in, especially since it was a campaign issue 4 years ago, and it will be again.
Yeah, good point. Oh man, that could be a whole nother
It
episode
could be.
just
I could be
on
your regular guest. I could be your
attribution.
sidekick.
Yeah. No, because there is so much there is some controversy around what is the right attribution and to what to and is it di I guess this would be a question is it different depending on the kind of writing that you're doing? So like for example, when I worked in this podcasting company, our attitude towards quoting the podcast episodes was you can absolutely change the quote to be the what the person would have said if they were writing it. So that was our attitude towards quoting from episodes, quoting guests or quoting the host. It was like if you know, if the quote doesn't look good as a quote, but like it sounded good in your ears, you can change it to what that person probably would have written if they were writing. And I'm get and I'm sure in journalism world, that's like, no, you could never do that.
Well, it's a good point. In the general, in consumer media, newspapers, the mainstream media that we all know it, yes, that's verboten. You're really not supposed to do that. You're better off paraphrasing it. But in the B2B world, business to business trade journalism, the emphasis is more on delivering solutions to a sophisticated, high-powered audience to help them do a better job in their work. as opposed to reporting on an event at an eighth grade level for the general public's consumption.
Yeah.
So you can take more liberties there. And so I have gotten in the practice of cleaning up quotes because of that. Certainly the paraphrase, yeah, cleaning it up anyway, but I don't see a whole lot of harm in doing that. Some people may disagree, but going back to the Biden anecdote that I shared, when it comes to something like that, we really need to be transparent as journalists and let the public know, hey, you know, by the way, there was a confusion of these two wars that we were involved with. They have a right to know that because they're going to go to the polls in another year plus. Let them make up their own mind. We should give them the power of information and the truth. Yep.
All right, let's leave that attribution for a later episode. Getting back to the writing process, I wanted to ask you, I always like to try to make the episode practical for a listener who is, you know, early in their writing career. How do you use this writing method in, say, for example, ghostwriting a book? Like, is this something that you do when you're ghostwriting a book for a client? And if so, how do you, like, are you like having interviews with your author and then you're doing this exact approach for what, for chapters, for like, how does this get used?
It's a great question. And the short answer is it's exactly the same process. And in fact, prior to our call, I was mentioning I was on a call with two co-authors of my latest book project that I'm ghostwriting, two consultants in the human capital field that want to put a book out there about the importance of culture and tethering it to the bottom line, with the primary audience being C-suite executives. So it was the same thing. I had my Otter AI account up and running, and we talked for an hour and a half, really only about the preface of the book. We didn't even get into the first chapter. The goal today was to do the preface in the first chapter, but there was so much good stuff being shared, and when you have two co-authors as opposed to one, the conversation is going to double in size.
Yeah.
So I told them both, I reassured them, don't worry, we had a lot of really good stuff here. We didn't get to quite everything that we had hoped, but this process will work itself out over time and we'll hit a nice rhythm to where we can be a little more disciplined in the questions that are being asked. But I think there was a little bit more time that needed to be devoted on the front end of the process, because we're talking about big picture observations about the book. Why is this book being written? And to have it truncated in the form of a preface to before we start rolling up our sleeves for each chapter that is going to have a subtopic under the umbrella of culture.
Do you do this process when you're trying to get a like, what do you start when you start a book project with a customer? How do you approach the very beginning, like before you've even written an outline? Are you doing something like this process to get to an outline?
Yeah, well, what I have done is try to get as much information from the client as possible, the author, background information, a rough outline if they have it. And then I'll seed interviews with questions or talking points based on that background material. And so that's kind of the next stage of it. And then the way the book project unfolds, it's really essentially outline the book, come up with dozens of questions to ask. I prefer to do it in weekly calls that are 90 minutes each, so we don't have information overload. And then writing a first draft and then working on the revisions. Now, for this particular project that I'm on, I'm thinking of rethinking that process, actually, and figuring during the time that I'm doing the reporting, the fact-finding gathering of information, the content, that after each of those calls, I will discipline myself to try to write 2,000 words a week and do it for a good 3 months. Okay. And then I can hit the sweet spot that we're targeting for the book of roughly 30,000 words. And this way it kind of writes itself as we're going along, as opposed to being siloed with this is the reporting stage, this is the first draft stage, and this is the revision stage, which I've done in the past.
Yeah. I love it, Bruce. These conversations, just getting to talk about the craft of writing and how different writers approach the craft, is so helpful for me. And I hope that it's helpful for listeners that are starting out in their career. Like, I think ghostwriting is probably one of the best. Like, if you desire to be a writer, ghostwriting is one of the best places to start. And so I think overall off this episode, if it's a $99 tool, it's freaking worth it to just have an AI that's transcribing your interviews, and you just welcome them to the Zoom interview. Like, how does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. They get into the interview just like a person would.
Yeah.
It's embedded into all of these video platforms that we've become accustomed to since the pandemic. One other caveat about ghostwriting is that there's a lot of money you can make in ghostwriting, and it's very fulfilling for me as someone who's a lifelong people pleaser. It's so satisfying when someone says, "Oh my God, I love what you did. Like, how you put my words into such a professional form. I could never do this myself." And, you know, that fills me up with a lot of joy. But the thing is, you got to check your ego at the door too, because you're not getting credit for this stuff. They're getting credit. You're the ghost. You're behind the scenes. Nobody knows that you exist. So, you know, if you have a pretty big ego and you want to have your byline out there and everything, you know, unless you're somebody like Martin Dugard, who shares the book cover byline with Bill O'Reilly on his Killing series, then maybe ghostwriting's not for you.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you're trying to because there are actually a lot of clients that happily credit the ghostwriters in their work. I've seen several books that do this. Obviously, you can't expect that. But then the other thing is, like, you're going to hone your craft of writing a book. Like, writing a book is something, it's like, I almost think writing a book is better than getting a degree. Obviously, you need to have something to say, but, like, it's a very powerful thing potentially to do. And if you have this this bank of experience of writing book after book after book for other people, your own book is only going to be that much better when you go to produce it. But maybe that's an episode for another time.
Exactly. And sorry about the background noise from the air conditioning compressor that is right to my left.
Well, another great thing about Zoom is it filters out the background noise, so we didn't even hear it. Bruce, this has been a great conversation. I really appreciate you coming on. I can't wait to talk to you again about some more controversial topics. Is there anything, is there anywhere that you want listeners to go to check you out?
If they Google me, they'll find my website. Probably comes up first. It's bruceshutan.com. And the last name is spelled Shutan.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on.
You got it, Timmy. Thank you for having me.